Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Oh, what a day. Welcome to the IGN UK podcast with me, Simon Cardi. Al, you look to me there like you don't agree that what a day it is.
It's not about the day. It's about the, I thought you were going to burst into song. I was like, Jesus Christ,
what have I signed up for? If I don't know how to start a podcast, I just make a noise and it gets me going. So there we go. So to speak.
Is that how you get out of bed in the morning, making that sort of racket?
Yeah, I just go, oh. Yeah.
And your mum's downstairs going, oh, fuck's sake, he's away.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be Tarzan, and that's the closest I can do to his noise.
It's not a very
Tarzan in a while.
It's not a very guttural noise. It's more of a, I was thinking more sort of Warner Brothers cartoon noise, but
I'll tell you that also. Okay. Matt, what's your wake up noise?
Not that. It's the Android generic alarm noise.
Oh, see, I have my alarm. I actually still have an alarm clock deliberately because I have it like on the other side of my room, so it forces me to like get out of bed and walk to turn it off. So I wake up.
Is it a novelty alarm clock? I used to have a Wallace and Gromit one when I was a kid.
It's probably one I've had for almost 15 years. Like it's one from Argos. That's how long, I haven't been in an Argos in like 10 years probably. So
oh my God. I go into Argos, I would say, almost every weekend.
Really? Ooh. I haven't looked in the catalogue. Do they still have physical like book catalogues or is it all digital these days?
I don't know. They certainly don't have them in store. It's all touchpads stores. Most of them are in Sainsbury's now as well.
Oh, there we go. The things you learn. But yeah. Occasionally I do like, I don't know, once every couple of months, like I think we all do it, like I sleep on my arm and I wake up and my arm is completely numb. Like pins and needles so bad that like I go over to my alarm clock and I'm trying to turn it off but I can't feel anything at the end of my fingers, so I'm just like I can't put any pressure on the alarm clock to turn it off. It's a desperate few seconds. I must look like a maniac.
I don't think I've had to be woken up by an alarm clock for probably 15 years, so
yeah, well I do, there we go. Otherwise you wouldn't get any work out of me and we wouldn't want that, would we?
No, we wouldn't.
No. What a day it is, though. I say that because... Well, what a day it is for me, anyway. I mean, we've got a new Spider-Man game that everyone can play. That's a good start to a day. Also today, a new Martin Scorsese film you can go and see. Isn't that a treat? I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to need to find 3.5 hours in my busy work life to go see it. But I'll find the time.
It's supposed to be very good.
I can't. I've been looking forward to this for years. I will find the time.
I'm going to the cinema tomorrow, actually.
Are you? Come.
I'm going to see Taylor Swift.
Oh, I'd also like to see that.
Are you going to dance at the front, Al, like all of these teenage girls have been doing?
What do you think?
Yes. Or you might want to get involved and become part of the cult of Swift.
I will enjoy it because I've listened to a lot of Taylor Swift lately, but at the same time, I'm not getting out of my seat and going down the front and dancing.
I'm right thinking you and your family are going to the actual tour next year,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like, were there no talks of like, do we not want to go see this? Do we want to save the surprise for the
My daughter
the
is
real
obsessed,
thing?
Honestly.
Oh, right. There was no way it wasn't going to happen.
Yes. Like, this is her second time seeing it. It's my first. So.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I don't think I'll go see it in the cinema, but, you know, when it comes out at home, I'll give it a watch. I like a little bit of a I'm just intrigued by that show because it seems absolutely mad. But, yeah, I'll go see Scorsese first, probably. Yeah. And a new Blink 182 album. I'm just having a great... This is just a great time to be me, frankly. So, yeah, everyone be
Mario.
Happy for me.
Mario's that today.
A new Mario game. I know we won't talk about that today, mainly because I don't think we've really played it. But
none of us have played
We'll play it at some point because it looks fantastic. What I have been playing, though, we've all been playing a bit of Marvel Spider-Man 2. I even bloody reviewed it, didn't I? Gave it a good old 8 out of 10. It's a great game. Yeah, I think the first thing I'd like to say is if you loved the other two Spider-Man games, I think you'll love this one. So, you know, rest easy if you're worried about that.
It is very much more of the same. In a good way, in a bad way. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that means that you can expect the same levels of polish. Like, you know, it's a very spectacular looking game, but isn't really trying much new.
No, I feel like, for me anyway, the main story and is the highlight. And I think that's what a lot of people want anyway out of this. You'll get a good, 17 to 20 odd hour story out of it, which is very good. And it is a great Spider-Man story, I think. I think the first half does a good job at like kind of building this kind of like idyllic life for not necessarily idyllic, but you know, it's happier times with Spider-Man. His friend Harry's back in his life. He's working things out of MJ and Miles is off at school and they're kind of, you know, things are settling down after, you know, the first Spider-Man game, Miles Morales, they kind of have their fair share of trauma. But then the second half of this, it kicks back into that gear and really goes into a life of its own, I think, and takes off in that second half. I don't necessarily like the final one or two missions as much, but the last, almost like the third quarter of the game, I think it's just like nonstop amazing. But yeah, I know, Matt, you have similar thoughts to me on that, I think.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit more critical on the first half of the game for me. I spent quite a lot of the first half of the story rolling my eyes because it's very twee. It's so like dead set in its pursuit of happiness for these characters that it almost feels a bit like, why is, for example, like its depiction of Harry Osborn is he's a member of the Glee Club and he's like this this wonderful sort of CEO for this like new company where he's like employed like this incredibly diverse board and, you know, sharing the profits and bringing kind of Peter into it. And everybody's just a little bit too kind of like so perfect that it makes you feel a bit like, well, where's the kind of like little bit of reality grounding of this? Like, why is everybody so kind of almost Gen Z happy? Then the good stuff happens. Like, you get to the actual inciting incident of kind of like this. It's a retelling of the Venom saga from the comics. And I think it gets really fucking good from that point. It's out of all of the retellings of Venom that I've seen, so sort of, you know, the Raimi stuff, bits in the cartoon and stuff, this is my favorite, I think. I think they do a really good job of making the symbiote. There's almost an element of Ridley Scott's Alien to it. There's some sequences where, like, you're in underground passageways kind of under New York and you have, like, the black symbiote stuff. And it feels oppressive and it feels like it stalks. And I think that side of things is done very well. And then just the general, you know, the symbiote, much like the ring in Lord of the Rings, is a harbinger for kind of like terrible acts, right? And the people that are caught in the symbiote become horrible people. And I think it does that transition with the characters that it uses, which we won't spoil because some of those trailers might have put you in one way and maybe it doesn't go the way you think it will. But the way that it deals with that, I think, is done very well. And it manages to make really interesting multi-layered characters through that, like the friendships and relationships that the Venom elements put pressure on and like the elements where kind of like Miles and Peter have to work their way around that, I think makes for some really interesting tinderbox kind of moments between these characters and some really, really good boss fights.
Yeah. I like the symbiote stuff a lot. And I think the Venom stuff's definitely the highlight. I was actually pleasantly surprised. I did think for a long time maybe Kraven would kind of be there and then go. But I think they do actually give him a genuine... They give him more depth to his character than I expected. I don't think he's as interesting as Venom as a character, but they do. There is a surprising amount there that, oh, I do actually understand him a bit more. He's not just this hunter going for the pure thrill of a hunt, going to New York to kill people. There is more to it than that. And they do a good job there. I also, talking about that second half, there are some just some missions which are pure, like, Uncharted level, like, you know, action set piece stuff, which the first couple of Spider-Man games did have, but this takes it to a new level. Like, even the opening of this game is just, they know how to open a game. The first mission, I think, is fantastic. Just the spectacle of it is amazing. It's such a, like, a welcome back to this world. And I do actually think, sadly, one of maybe the best, one of a couple of best missions is that lizard one they showed at the State of Play, which I think is just maybe the highlight of the game. But they didn't show all of it, which is good, because it carries on, and like as it moves into the city, it gets even better, I think. But it's a shame they showed that. I know why they want to show it, because they want to show off the game at its best. But I'm like, ah, if I didn't know that was happening, I would be like 10 times more excited by this. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I just think the story is, it's great, and it is great as a main campaign. It's where the side stuff, I think, not all of the side stuff lets it down. There is some more interesting side stuff, but a lot of it is, I think, checklist stuff, which I was hoping we'd move away from slightly. I know a lot of people enjoy that, and it's not necessarily as, like, if you're into going around and collecting things or doing time trials, you'll have a great time. But I was just, I know you're on the same page as me, Matt. We're just hoping for maybe the next step up, the next evolution of what Insomniac can do with an open world.
Yeah, I think... Oh, sorry, just to sort of jump in there. I feel the same. If it wasn't for you guys telling me to do these specific side missions, I would have ended up doing, you know, one moment I was on top of a roof watering some plants, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Why am I doing that?
Yeah.
And then on the map, there's this other quest line, but it doesn't differentiate between the two. And it's like, that's more interesting.
Yeah, this is a thing that I think that is a problem, is there are clearly quest lines and side activities, but the thing is it wants to group the side activities into what I think the designers believed were quest lines, but really are just checkbox activities. So there's a lot to do with kind of like botany, I guess, is the best term for it.
Yeah, you're doing kind of science research.
And there is a vague storyline that runs through that to make it feel like it is a quest line. But ultimately what it is a bunch of what I think are quite bad mini games where you lay down tiles to kind of fulfill
splicing different things. Yeah.
This weird botany thing. And then that quest line in particular is quite bad for this, because there's also a drone mini game where you go around like firing off virtual bees, and then there's the one where you have to kind of like rotate like DNA strands and break things out.
That's the one I enjoyed the most, but like they're never challenging, are they? And not that I necessarily want really hard puzzles, but I just think it says a lot where every single puzzle mini game in this game, it immediately gives the option like, would you like to skip this? It's like, it's almost like they know people want to not do these. It's weird.
I
was just saying, all of those feel like they fulfill this kind of like, it's never quite as with lacking in meaning is the way that kind of the first game had got a lot of, it was just go and find things. So like go and find the backpacks that are hidden around. Yeah. There was a lot of that in the first game. And they've narrowed that down to the point that there's only really one thing like that in this game, which is find these spider bots that are hidden all the way around. Everything else has kind of been made a little bit more meatier, but I find that the mini game stuff feels so pulled from kind of 2007 game design. Like it feels really two generations old at this point. But because there's not a lot of differentiation between that and, for example, there is a quest line called The Flame. It's only about four missions long. That is genuinely worth doing, because they are actual missions which, you know, feel like smaller versions of your main quest that lead to quite an important reveal at the end. Yeah.
Those are much more like what Arkham are doing, right? Yeah, they're almost like flashes of Arkham, like little villain side stories, basically. And like characters pop up and it's like, it's really good. And I was hoping for more of that. And you only kind of really, that's the only really like one of those. Miles has kind of an equivalent, which is more charming and like actually quite, I liked where that went, but like, yeah, I just wanted more. Like, Spider-Man has almost Batman aside, like an unmatched rogues gallery, I think, of villains. And this does use quite a few of them, and a couple do pop up, but like, I just wanted one or two more surprises. You know, I always use the Man-Bat comparison, but to me that is like the gold standard of like a reactive open world, just like, oh, this is happening now. And but like, I just wanted that in this world, and I didn't quite get it. And I know like the open world structure of this game will be like a comfort blanket for a lot of people, and like they'll read my criticism of it and be like, oh, that sounds fun, that's cool, if you enjoy that, enjoy it. But I wanted that next step, and like we're saying there, it kind of buries kind of a half step in amongst a lot of mud. But yeah,
well, I think like coming off the back of playing 200 hours worth of Tears of the Kingdom, when you've got that open world and you see, oh, what's that? That's interesting. And you go and discover something cool. This, it puts a massive neon HUD around it and says, oh, you should look here. And it just doesn't feel as organic or interesting when you get through it.
Discovery or exploration, really, is there not? They're obviously not going for that, right? That's not what they're aiming for, so it feels bad to criticize that to an extent. But like, what I want to see nowadays is that sort of thing. Like, my favorite open worlds are like Red Dead, like a stranger will pop up, and this does have kind of, they're hardly stranger missions, but there are one or two that kind of leave a bit of an impact, but they're never really quirky enough, or like, I don't remember those characters' names apart from like one from a previous game. But the last few days, because I'm kind of in between games, I've gone back to Yakuza Like a Dragon and I've been walking around that world, and like every side story, every like activity has a memorable character, something quirky, mad going on. Like, I remember their story. They're not just one step, they're normally like two steps to their quest line, whereas this, it's like you'll meet someone, they're like, you'll swing 300 meters away, beat someone up, come back, and they'll be like, thank you. And that's kind of it. I'm just like, I just wanted, I don't know, I wanted to connect to the people of New York more, Matt.
But well, I think,
yeah, there's a lot of the kind of also not necessarily to do with the people, where you'll do the same thing over and over. So for example, there's these things where you have to follow these robot birds, and they essentially make kind of wind tunnels behind them, but you will do that about six times, and there's no variation other than the route they take. It's got another equivalent of like, hey, go here and beat up these 20 guys and then get the reward from the end of it. There's a lot of doing the same thing over and over, and I think I agree that this game did not need to aim to be Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom. Like, it's not that sort of game. What I think it should have done that takes from that and then also looks back to Arkham Knight as a good example of how to do like an urban open world, is that idea of there can be a theme to, like, you know, a villain's set. So let's say kind of like Mysterio has a presence in this game that is to do with just challenge rooms, and there's no variation in that at all. I would have liked to have seen kind of like, maybe there's a theme to do with Mysterio that runs through it, but that changes every time you do an activity with him. And if that meant reducing the amount of activity in this game, I think I would have been happy with that. I'd have been happy with reduced hours for a higher quality and a higher ambition bar for that open world.
Because they're not really quest lines, that's the thing. Like, they kind of paint themselves questline, because like, you'll complete one, then like you'll get a phone call or something for 10 seconds, be like, oh, we're looking into this, I think I found something. But it doesn't really progress the story until you finish each of those branches, and you will get, admittedly, some of them have like a really cool like minute long cutscene at the end which reveals something or teases something, but like, it doesn't feel like a questline. It feels like you've done all the work, now have a treat. Like, they put like the carrot in front of the stick rather than like, you know, interesting breadcrumbs along the way.
I think this is,
I don't want to be too down, because I do think this is still a great game. Well, and like the combat is still like as good as any combat I've played in a game. Like, I think it still feels amazing.
My point with all of that is kind of like, for the first kind of like maybe 12 hours I played of it, less than that, maybe about 8. I kind of felt like I enjoyed it, but it was like, this is just the same game that I've played before, but I get to play as two Spider-Men now. And I wasn't enjoying the storyline as much. Like, I think the first section of the original Spider-Man and the first section of Miles Morales is better than the first section of this. However, when you get to the section that people saw at Summer Games Fest, where you see Peter kind of launch himself out of a basement and then go down the river, from that point onwards, I went from thinking like, oh, this is just the same and I would have scored it the same as I would have the last one, which I'm harsher on the last one. I would have given it a 7. That's where I started to see an increase in quality, because I think whilst the open world is only like a quarter step, half step forward, I think the storytelling in the back half of this game is better than the storytelling in the previous games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you know what? The weird thing is, you know, I'm not being too cruel, because again, I think this is a great game and I had a lot of fun playing it. Did platinum in it in what, 27 hours? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, at the same time, I was like bored of doing these repetitive tasks. But when it ended, I was like, oh, I wish I had more to do. Because once you're done, if you know what I mean. Like, you can go do the random crimes, which are the same, pretty much the same as last time. And thankfully, you don't need to do any random crimes this time. You could be a terrible Spider-Man and completely ignore every random crime alert, because you don't need to do them. That's kind of all that was left to do. And I was like, I still, for its flaws, I was like, oh, I still want more of this. Like, I would still play. And ultimately, I suppose that's, Insomniac is so good at turning these games around. Like, if every 2 years I get a 15 to 20 hour cool Spider-Man story, I guess that's great. But yeah, I don't know where they go from here. I'm looking forward to Wolverine, what I will say.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think part of it's to do with the polish, though, right? Like, Al, you said earlier that it's so supremely polished in the way that kind of like that swinging has never felt as good as it does in this. And I know that kind of like the swinging has minor improvements in this. Like, for example, you get the web wings now, so you can kind of glide your way through New York now and kind of catch the wind current, so you can effectively fly. But that combined with, it's always really responsive with what you want to do. Like, when you're in combat, kind of like, you've now got these kind of like, there's four gadgets and four kind of abilities, right? Which is sort of like a slight kind of rethink of how combat used to work. Mm-hmm. And being able to use that combined with the kind of web shooters, I feel that comes together really, really nicely. And I think there's a nice bit of differentiation between Miles has these like confusingly called Venom attacks. They've got nothing to do with Venom.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that Marvel, when they
probably
this,
went, yeah, they must have thought like a few years ago, oh, we should have called that sound.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just like, mm-hmm.
But he effectively, they're electric powers, and that creates some really cool elements. And you can use Miles whilst his standards form is the same as Peter. Like, they're both bitten by spiders, right? They both have that spider thing. The ability for him to kind of electrify enemies and chuck them up and then use them as effectively a conduit to send more electricity between creates almost this very cool crowd control element to him. Whereas Peter has got these kind of like metal spider legs that warp out the back of his back. He's kind of got the Iron Spider thing, right? And then that allows you to kind of like zoom forward into people or kind of lift people into the sky and then beat them up into the top. I mean, all of that feels so responsive and so slick that it does feel, whilst I think there's always going to be something in my heart that likes like the brutality of the Arkham combat system, I think this feels exactly what it needed for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And yes, it's still relying on the basis that was made kind of what, like 4 years ago now, but it still works and it still feels really good. And it's that polish that carries it so far.
And those new symbiote abilities feel great too as well. Once you get those, they feel great. And I think as a whole, like, I don't, this game is just like a technical marvel. Like, I'm not sure I've seen a more technically impressive game than this. Like, even the small things of like, not that you ever really want to do it, because swinging around this world is so fun, but the fast travel in this game is absolutely absurd. Like, I think it's 1.3 seconds, and not only that, you can pinpoint anywhere on the map and it will take you to that street within like a second and a half. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And the fact that ray tracing cannot be turned off in this game, it's just on. Like, there are performance modes if you want it in 60, which is what I went for, because I think you want it as smooth as possible, and it still looks stunning. But like, fidelity, performance mode, they will just have ray tracing on. Like, I don't know what they're doing over there, Insomniac, but like, they've managed to give the optimal experience for everyone, and I didn't have a single hard crash. Like, I don't even know if I saw like a dropped frame. It was that good. Like, they're doing something on the next level over there.
I think I had to restart three or four missions because whatever I had to achieve wasn't open to me, but it, you know, it was...
That might have been patched out now by now.
I'm sure it probably was, and it was a couple of minutes of replaying stuff. It wasn't anything bad. I think for me, my experience of it, it was much like a Marvel movie, you know, and I think that's a good thing, is that, you know, I came away from it thinking, well, that was satisfying. It's not the greatest game I've ever played, but, you know, it's a brilliant blockbuster popcorn game.
Like, they are on... If we're looking, I've actually, well, by the time this is out, I've written a column for Beyond about like the storytelling formula for PlayStation and how it's kind of developed. I do feel like they have kind of taken that, and they did with this first Spider-Man game. It's all about, you know, finding the emotional core in like world-ending disasters. This is basically the PlayStation theme of the last 10 years or so. I do feel like I still have Insomniac on that like run below like the Naughty Dog and Santa Monica level. Like, they haven't reached that Uncharted God of War heights for me yet. They're kind of on that level with Ghost of Tsushima for me, that just run below, which haven't quite... I don't know if it's purely because they're both open world games and it's harder to achieve that.
It's
with
also
open world,
they feel, but because of the structure of Spider-Man outside of its story, it feels so much like a video game. And I'm not saying feeling like a video game is bad. Like, I love a lot of games that are very video gamey. But on those sort of ambitions, Naughty Dog and Santa Monica make you feel like you're part of this experience. And there's a little less of the kind of video game kind of tropiness to those, even though they are also full of their own tropes. But this is a lot more of a checklisty sort of game than those are.
Yeah, they've got different ambitions, right, I think, slightly. Even if their stories are aiming for similar sort of ground, I think.
But it would be interesting to see what they do with Wolverine. Like, would they go, like, the Logan route and do something completely different with
I
that
think
character?
They'll
or go traditional superhero. I'm sure they're going to go traditional superhero.
I don't think they will. I think they'll go more, like, 16, 18 rate. I feel like that... I don't think it'll be open world. I think it will be more God of War like open areas sort of behind the show. That works because Wolverine can't quite, he doesn't swing around, right? He can jump, he can run quick, but like, I feel like that's much more, you can always see it like the Kratos sort of moveset, right? Almost for Wolverine. That's what I'm hoping for anyway. I don't know anything.
But in terms of the maturity though, I'd love to see them tackle something with a bit more kind of like, Venom, I was going to say.
I don't think they'll go fully dark, but I do think it'll be... You can't make a Wolverine game and not ripping people up, can you?
I mean, I guess they have, because there's really only the, you know, the tie-in game they did. That's the only one I can think of where it's like blood, like cascading out of people.
I think these days, though, that's what, I don't know. That's what I want anyway, but we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. Knowing Insomniac, that'll be out in like, a year, basically to pump them out. I don't know what they're doing, but yeah, let us know what you think of Spider-Man 2. IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. It's a very good game, had a very fun time with it. Yeah, good stuff, innit? When you're not playing the game, maybe you'll want to watch some TV. The Fall of the House of Usher is out just in time for Halloween. Al, you've already finished all of this. I mean, you did have to sacrifice being quiet on well. So, yes. You know, that's how you got through it.
Really bad kidney pains while watching.
Yeah, yeah. You finished it. I've only watched the first three. Matt, you've watched the first four.
I have.
And we wouldn't spoil it all anyway, so don't worry. But if you don't know what The Fall of the House of Usher is, it is Mike Flanagan's new horror Netflix series. I say horror drama. He's good at that sort of like family dynamic horror, right? Of Hill House and Midnight Mass and all of that jazz. This is based on The House of Usher from Edgar Allan Poe, but also a lot more of his short stories he kind of fuses in there. The second episode does a great job of The Mask of Red Death. I think that's the name of that short story, which is a great one. But yeah, if you're into your Poe like me, a lot of little nerdy things with like names going on in there and stuff. But I'm having a great time so far. I'm only three episodes in, but it's very much what I wanted, right? It's Succession but horror is practically what this show is. And the coolest thing, this is by no means a spoiler, at the end of every episode, I'm still not over it three times in, just the name of the show turning up right at the end of every show with a big thud to me, that's just a cool little touch. But what are you guys thinking?
Is that your takeaway?
I just love that because I'm like, yeah. That's a nice little flex that I like. It's just like, boom, at the end of every episode, like the fall of the House of Usher. It's good. Great cast as well. Pretty much every face you've seen in
a
Mike Flanagan show before pops up. Mark Hamill's really creepy. I'm only 3 episodes in, but he's being a creep.
He's very good in it. So I am not familiar with the source material at all. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. In fact, I read IGN's explainer, which is very good, actually. And it gave me loads of details, which I was, I didn't realize that. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. But I think he set the bar so high with Midnight Mass and with Hill House, which were my 2 favorites of his, mm-hmm. that this doesn't quite reach up to that. I didn't feel like there was quite as much at stake.
That's fair. I mean, I'm only a few in. I would say, yeah, for me, Hill House is still number one with Midnight Mass ever so slightly behind it. I think they're both like near masterpieces.
Yeah.
But this is still, I'm not sure this is quite reaching that level for me yet, but I'm having a fantastic time with it. And yeah, Matt, are you enjoying yourself?
I'm less fussed on this. So I actually really
just enjoy something, Matt. Have a fun time.
I liked the first episode a lot, which I think has big Succession vibes.
Yeah,
very much has that sort of thing going on. And I really like the core concept of the show, which I think we can outline that. So the fall of the House of Usher. So Usher as a house is kind of like, they essentially own like this mass, they're big farmer. They're a big farmer kind of mm-hmm. household.
In pharmaceuticals, yeah. Not farmers.
And basically kind of like the opening episode, like straight off the bat reveals that basically the head of the Usher house, his children have all died. And so the basic kind of structure of the show is that each episode kind of adapts a Edgar Allan Poe short story into mm-hmm. like the story of one of these children that have kind of died. Adult children, not actual teenagers or whatever. Yeah. And so I love that structure. And there's a lot of kind of Flanagan elements about it that I like. Very often like a weird thing out the corner of your eye to have a look at.
He's great at that.
Like really good set design, really good costume design as well. I don't think it's bad. I'm going to put it out there. And I really like the horror elements of it. I think it's doing that very well. I am just struggling to click with the story, and I don't think it's a badly told story. It's just not a story that I found investment in around each of these characters and around the grander, like there's a little bit of kind of like stuff in the 1980s and stuff in the kind of modern day. I am just not connecting with that in the way that I properly connected with Midnight Mass's kind of like dramatic tale.
I feel like there isn't really that linchpin, that like relatable character, which those shows had. And also like, it's definitely vibing off of Succession a mm-hmm. bit. And despite Succession, most of those people being horrible individuals, you still rooted for them. Well, like they still managed to get their claws. Exactly. Whereas these characters are kind of more caricatures. They're more like all of these children, and to an extent, Roderick Usher himself as well, is they're all just detestable for the most part. There is no redeemable features so far, anyway, that I've found with any of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe one or two of the children aren't as bad. That's fair. But so especially in the first couple that die, I was like, oh yeah, you're pretty. I don't really like you. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I don't really care if you die. Which that's not a problem in horror. Like sometimes you watch a horror film, you're like, I can't wait to see how this person mm-hmm. dies. But so far, I'm only 3 episodes in, but she's been in a lot of his stuff. But Carla Gugino is incredible in this so far. She's like taking it to a next level.
Very chameleon like in this, in that she gets to kind of like try out different kind of vibes with each mm-hmm. episode that she's in, which is very cool.
Yeah, I'm just having a great time.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of talk about without going into spoilers, because I do think it wraps up some things, some seeds that it plants early, and I think it does a good job of bringing that together. And I'd be interested to have a sort of more open conversation when you finish watching it. And I also think that when it goes all in, like some of the death scenes, like Jesus Christ, it's like,
they are some of his gnarliest. Like there's eyes popping out and all sorts of grim, horrible grossness.
Oh, I expect that. Yeah, that second episode is like, the way it ends is like, you know, yeah, there's a lot of flesh, let's put it that way. There's a it goes there. I've deliberately not looked up like what my next door neighbor just started drilling, so if you can hear that, I apologize, but maybe I'm in a Flanagan show, maybe it's going to come through the wall and I'm going to get, I don't know, drilled to death.
The stuff in the walls in the next episode you've got to watch.
Oh god, brilliant. Well, I deliberately haven't looked up what short, because I haven't read everything from our grandpa, but I'm familiar with enough of the stories to know, like, oh, here's how this one is gonna go, because especially, like I said, the Mask of the Red Death, like that's this second episode, it kind of fairly follows what happens in that short story, so I was like, oh, I know, even like the character school of Prospero is the same, like, you know,
right?
So like I'm guessing, like, there's no way, and I think they've already alluded to it, like the Telltale Heart is a banger, and I hope they do a, I feel like that's kind of almost going to be the crux of this, I feel. And yeah, I'm very much into that. But yeah, read a bit of Edgar Allan Poe if you haven't. Some good stuff.
I feel like I watched it now.
Exactly. Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix. If you haven't watched it. Only 8 episodes, hour long each. Probably won't get much better things to watch this Halloween than that, I imagine. That's new.
So, I started watching Haunted Mansion on Disney Plus. Jesus, that is a chore to get through.
I did watch a couple of weeks ago, I don't know, I wasn't on the podcast and I don't know if you mentioned it, Cody, but that Totally Killer that's on Amazon at the moment.
I haven't watched that.
That is a real fun watch. It's a like a fun Halloween film rather than a horror one, but that is basically, it's like Scream, it's kind of got that slightly meta slasher element about it, mixed with Back to the Future, because it's about people that have survived a slasher like years ago, and that slasher returns kind of like a few decades later, and so there's literally a time travel machine in it that takes someone back to that era, almost Back to the Future, like, in order for them to be able to change the past to stop the slasher.
Is it a little bit like that Fear Street that was on Netflix?
Fear Street is much more of a straight horror. Like, I loved Fear Street.
I liked Fear Street as well. I thought it was great.
And that was much more kind of gnarly and, you know, I think the guy that scored Scream does the score for that. So it got proper Scream vibes to it. But whereas that is more of a full-on slasher, this is definitely more in the vibe of, if you've watched Happy Death Day, it's got...
I haven't.
It's got more of, for anybody that has seen that, it's definitely a comedy, but, you know, it's got plenty of blood in it and stuff like that, but it's definitely a riff on Scream. It's got a bit of Halloween to it, but as I say, the fact that it literally has a time travel machine in it makes it much more of a kind of, like, it's the sort of Halloween film that you put on at 7 o'clock rather than at midnight.
I watched a horror film to an extent this week. I rewatched Spotlight again. Absolute masterpiece. If you haven't watched Spotlight, watched it again. That's a weird, like, when I have a list of comfort films, that is a weird comfort film for me. So I'm like, oh, there's just 2 hours of people talking really intensely while someone behind me is just drilling through a wall, apparently. So there we go. Enjoy listening to that. What a noise that is. Anyway, Fall of the House of Usher, check that out.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
The Endless Search. We've been continued to send in Endless Search themes, and we've got a banger this week, which you'll hear in a moment. It was sent in from, let me find my document, sent in from Adam Denby. And it's not drill music, which is what you're hearing at the moment. this one's from Adam Denby. Says, hi IGN UK folks, since Cardi mentioned Blink-182 last week and the ongoing theme song debate is yet to reach a conclusion, I decided to record a pop punk version of The Endless Search. Like 90s garage music, pop punk will likely be divisive, but I wanted to put something I want to put forward something that touched on another late 90s to early 2000s genre that gives us something new without losing the legacy of the original theme song brilliance. I always look forward to the podcast, everyone, and I'd love to hear what you think of the track submission. As always, respect the sea. And that's from Adam Denby. I still listen to pop punk now. I listen to old pop punk. I listen to new pop punk. Stop laughing at the drill, man.
It's like you're just, you've got a wind problem, Cardi.
It's a drill, I promise it's a drill, and there's nothing I can do about it. They're getting their kitchen refitted. I can't tell them to stop because I'm talking about Spider-Man. Oh, well, anyway, why don't we give everyone a break from the drill and listen to this theme song, which is definitely a little slice of pop punk. Here it is.
Yeah, I'm the ones and twos. We got the games complaint for you. Inside questions for you. Yeah, I'm the ones and twos. We got the games complaint for you. Inside questions for you. It's the endless. It's the endless search.
So this week's endless search was sent in by Lee Button, who also sent us in a theme tune, but we're going to be running that at a later date. His endless search is, what the hell did we say that about? So we've got five games or movies or TV shows. And he's pulled quotes from each thing.
You have to guess
what they're in reference to.
I do always worry it's going to be something I've written. I just forgot.
If you guess it on the first clue, you get 5 points. All the way down to the fifth clue, 1 point. There are mentions of said TV shows, games, etc. in some of these quotes, at which point I'll just go, eh, or something okay. really annoying like that.
Okay. Well, that would sound of a drill.
Exactly.
Are we going to be told if it's a game, a TV show, a movie?
Why don't we start and see how we get on? And then if it's getting too hard, then I'll give you clues.
Okay. I've got it.
But
got
for now, let's start with the first one. So for 5 points, you're never ever going to get this, but if 2020 needed anything, it was
I mean, it's something that came out in 2020. That's what we've got. I think I might know this.
Oh my God.
Is it Animal Crossing New Horizons?
Not, no. I thought, if you're going to get it.
That was like the thing everyone needed in 2020, wasn't it?
Well, they needed this too. Apparently.
God, I've tried to wipe most of 2020 from my memory. Fucking horrible. What did 22? Needed something nice and comforting, right? Which you would say is Animal Crossing, but it wasn't. Was it Call of Duty Warzone?
You just said something nice.
I did need
comforting.
That. To be fair, that did get me through a lot of that year.
Okay. But yeah. After saying,
I love how you said nice and comforting and then went, Scorlogy.
That's not what I expected you to say, and unfortunately it's not the right answer. So for 4 points, is the sort of pure positivity infused joy your heart... joy your heart is likely sought out in these dark times?
I definitely didn't write that, and if I did, I apologise.
It's not Warzone.
That, to me, makes it sound like it's a TV show or a film rather than a game.
Is it Ted Lasso? Oh.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh,
yes, it is.
Of course, the tweeest of all tweeners.
4 points. So, look, I don't think you do need me to tell you whether it's a TV show.
Maybe not. God, maybe a Ted Lasso.
And I think, well, obviously that was that set it in a certain time frame, right? So maybe that helped. We'll see get on with these albums.
Oh, it definitely helped.
Right, the second one for 5 points. It's aggravating that there's no way to invite players to join your matches.
Remnant 2.
No.
I mean, that was exactly what I was thinking of.
That's because me and Matt had that exact issue. We're like, should we play this together? It's like, oh, well, we couldn't invite each other at launch, so we never played it again. You can't invite. Well, it's definitely a game then, isn't it?
It is a game, yes. Quick guess, Matt.
No idea. All right. Not a clue.
For 4 points. Too broad. It's just as amazing in 2017 as it was in 2014.
Ooh. Something that
so
was
is it a remake that came out in 2017, like a remaster, or is it like a reassessment?
Mm.
When did so just as amazing in 2017 as it was in 2014?
Yes.
Hmm.
I think this is a big clue.
Yeah, is it Overwatch?
It is not Overwatch.
No, because Overwatch was 2016 when it came out. Yeah.
My head was going. And you can definitely invite. Like, what game would you not be able to invite people to? Oh, I think it. Okay, I've got. I was going to say that, but I'm going to keep that clue to myself.
Do you want to have a quick guess?
No, we'll move on. But is I think I'm on the line.
Grand Theft Auto 5 or Grand Theft Auto Online?
No. Nope.
Let's
for 3
on.
Points. This is the best entry in the series so far, and it has all the content you'll need. I think the clue before was...
That's not any easier.
No, the clue before was a bigger clue.
That's all the content you will need.
And it's very much about at least one of those years is a big clue.
One of those?
Like what happened in one of those years.
It's not FIFA Legacy Edition on Switch, is it? I don't know.
Is it? It's not Final Fantasy 14, is it?
It is not, no.
Oh.
For 2 points, every course, character, and mode is unlocked right from the start.
Mario Kart 8.
It is Mario
Deluxe.
Kart. Oh,
Deluxe.
Oh, that's it.
Deluxe. Oh, come on.
It is Mario Kart 8, yes.
You can't invite people.
Well, that's what we wrote about it.
Maybe you can now.
Maybe.
I don't.
But yeah, I think obviously 2017 was the launch of the Switch year, so it was something that came out previously.
Maybe that was,
Maybe
that's Nintendo, like, online at launch wasn't good at all, was it? So maybe it's fine now.
No. Number 3 for 5 points. Especially in the opening hours, it's hard to tell what's supposed to be real and what's supposed to be all in the kids' collective imagination.
The kids' collective. Hmm. I was going to say something bad, but it definitely would be that. It Takes Two?
No.
Lock and Key?
No.
No.
That was left field. I liked
it. Yeah, well,
I haven't thought about that in a few years.
For 4 points, it still delivers its share of the wow, they went there moments.
They went there. Is it Gen V?
No.
That ticked the boxes.
I know, I've not watched that yet. I do want to get around seeing it.
It's good.
No, I've not got a clue.
Okay, for 3 points. While it's mostly absurd, the kids' superhero fancy is actually a little touching in places.
it's definitely. I'm confused.
So it's kids that think they're superheroes. It sounds like.
I think so. I've not actually experienced this because I don't want to tell you whether it's a game, TV show, or movie either. But you'll find out what it is with the next clue.
Okay. Across the Spider-Verse.
No.
I don't know. Anything.
Right. For 2 points, of course, this being an RPG, the primary interaction you have in is combat. So, RPG, it's an RPG.
Superheroes.
Kids.
Oh, is it South Park the Fractured Butthole?
It is. South Park the Fractured Butthole.
There we go. Only because I literally made a playlist with that in the other day on IGN Playlist. Check it out for all your game ranking needs.
4 points each. So still very much all to play for.
Didn't I get the second one on 3, or have I gone mad?
No, you got the second one on 2 points. Every course, character, and mode is unlocked right from the start.
Oh, okay, I did. Sorry. I won't.
How dare
again.
You question me? I'm going to take a point off you if you do that again.
Oh, no.
Right, question 4. For 5 points, forget all the external noise from the deliberately vague teaser trailers, perfectly calibrated celebrity sound bites and footage leaks, and just strap in for the ride. God, that's a hell of a mouthful.
I don't know.
Do you want me to read it again? Or?
Yeah.
Forget all the external noise from the deliberately vague teaser trailers, perfectly calibrated celebrity sound bites and footage leaks, and just strap in for the ride.
Footage leaks.
So it was leaked, but there was a lot of...
Is it The Flash?
No. Good guess, though.
Not a clue.
Okay. For 4 points. Feels like it was made by fans for fans, to the point where some scenes will undoubtedly be labelled as outright fan service.
Is it Spider-Man No Way Home?
Ooh, that's a good one there. I'm going to need another clue.
Okay. For 3 points. There's no denying that this is the end of an era.
Is it the Snyder Cut?
It is not.
No.
End of an era. Is this just Endgame?
What's your...
Avengers Endgame?
It is Avengers Endgame, yes.
There we go. Do you only need to say Avengers Endgame instead of just...
Well, yes, I do.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean Ender's Game, if that's what you...
correct. Right. You're on 7 points, Cardi. Matt, you're still on 4.
Thank you.
Last question.
Ooh.
For 5 points. Take a moment to consider how bizarre this game world really is.
Balan Wonderworld.
What?
Balan Wonderworld.
If it was that, I'd commend you. Cyberpunk 2077.
No. Okay. For 4 points. While it's still packed with lunatics, a whole lot of what you encounter, for the most part, directly refer back to the main events of the game.
Main events. Batman Arkham City.
Nope.
A lot of lunatics.
Borderlands 3.
Nope. For 3 points, since you actually play as one of these giant armored monsters, the connection is strengthened. So it's a place filled with people who are unhinged. It's a bizarre game world.
Giant armored.
A celebrated game world, I would say, as well.
Bioshock 2?
It is Bioshock 2.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Okay. 3 points. So the final scores on the doors, 10 points to you, Cardi, and 4 points to you, Matt.
I've won. I feel like I haven't won in a long time. I feel good about that. Well, and the drilling stopped. That's good, isn't it?
Just as the big daddies have been introduced as well.
Exactly.
It's meant to be.
Isn't that Perfect. As usual, IGN underscore Yahoo feedback at IGN.com. Send in your endless search games, theme submissions, and anything else you want to talk about, including what we started last week was just reminiscing about the good old days of Smokey Beckham crisps and salt and Linekers. And we thought, oh, is there any modern day interpretations of these? We've had a mixed bag, I'm not going to lie, a bit like a big variety bag of Walkers. Some will be good, some will be bad. But here we go. Are any of them bad, actually? Are there any bad flavours of Walkers? You'd eat them all.
Oh, I thought you were going to say suggestions. I'm looking at something here and that sounds bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's some that don't make sense. And we'll get to that. First got one from James Heath. He says, love the football crisp chat last week. Was funnily enough, the previous weekend, my mum had been reminiscing with some relatives about when I was 7 years old and tried to come up with my own, which led to the unfortunately named salted semen. Which doesn't really...
You're not popping that in your mouth?
I'm not. I will not be. No. No, thank you. The best I can come up with these days is Pickford Onion. I think I went with Branston Pickford for some reason last week instead of the more obvious Pickford Onion. Even better if you make these Monster Munch and shape them like goalie gloves. It's a great
idea. They
do
look like goalie gloves already, yes.
Exactly. Should be writing in to Big Crisp to get those made, I think. Some more here, which are definitely a mixed bag, as we say. Here's one which... we'll say from Jamie Neal says, hello there, been listening since 2010 and had some fantastic laughs. This is the first time emailing in, and what a time to do it, Jamie. But listening to the Walkers crisps and player names, being an Arsenal fan, the name that popped into my head was Prawn Seaman. Does that work?
No.
I don't know what the play on. I don't know what the
prawn.
Seaman obsession is. And it's not even like semen, it's like cocktail.
I guess does he mean so because to prawns speak. Prawns come from the sea, right? I guess is the connection,
I guess that.
Here.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's not a wordplay pun in the way that like the old crisps were.
No. Would you rather munch on some salted semen or some prawn semen?
I think we should move on. That's what I think.
Okay, let's move on to the last one, which is actually quite good, from Mike Hyome. He says, hi guys, just into the football crisp chat. Here's my submission, Declan Rice and Spicy, in honour of the classic knick-knack crisp flavour, Nice and Spicy. That one actually works.
That does work. Lots of Arsenal suggestions as well. So excellent.
Well, you know, I'll let off because Declan Rice is a brilliant player, even if he does wear the wrong shirt. What have you got, Alex? You got an email
From James Singleton, who says, as he was my boyhood hero, I very much appreciated last week's David Beckham chat. So as an excuse to bring him up again, do you remember the game Go Go Beckham on Game Boy Advance? I do. The game follows the main character, David Beckham, on his quest to defeat the evil Mr. Woe in order to restore peace to Soccer Island. What the fuck? They don't make games like they used to. Beckham can use his football in order to collect items and remove enemies from play. The gameplay is similar to Yoshi's Island, and I'm sure you will agree it's an all-time classic. Respect the Sea, the Endless Search theme tune, and David Beckham.
It is basically a Yoshi's Island ripoff. It is completely that. And I felt like I had a GBA, and this came out, so when did this come out? 2002, so I was 10. Even at that age, I could discern from looking at the box that this was a shiter and didn't get it. Even if I loved football and I had a GB, I was like, I can tell this isn't good at the age of 10, and I didn't get it.
At what point do you think that Beckham's people put it in front of him and said, David, we've got this game for you, or did he just literally take the money and run?
I don't know. It follows David Beckham on his quest to defeat the evil Mr. Woe. I don't know.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Soccer Island. You know what? Come on.
So, Eurogamer's Tom Branwell called the game the best original platform game on the GBA.
Wow.
Maybe it isn't bad. IGN's Ben Cartledge felt the game beat most other third-party platform games for the GBA. Maybe this isn't a bad game.
And 10-year-old discerning Cardi is not so discerning after all.
I just wasn't the critic back then, was I? Maybe it is good. Although people did say it was too easy and wish there was more content. There we go. Maybe I need to dig out a copy of Go Go Beckham Adventure on Soccer Island.
Jesse can probably hook you up to some old consoles.
Oh, yeah, he's probably already got it downloaded by the time we're reading this out, hasn't he? One more email, Matthew. What we got?
This one's from Adam Wrigley, who says, "Hello, dear all." Is that hello, dear all?
Hello. I don't know.
I don't know if we're dears or just we're very dear to him.
Just couldn't choose between hello or dear, so I went for both, and I appreciate it. Yeah.
I know that Matt mentioned he'd almost finished his rewatch of Doctor Who in the run-up to the 60th, and I thought I'd chime in with my thoughts. With Russell T Davies returning, it seems to supercharge the show. Not that he would suggest it was failing due to Chibnall. It was. Doctor Who looks set to increase its international audience in a similar vein during Matt Smith's era. With the inspired casting of Shuti Gatwa and Russell T Davies having put out some of the best TV of the last several years, this is massively exciting to me. I'm about to start Jodie Whittaker's series, and whilst I dislike them as much as anyone, I seem to like the series more when I go back to them after a while. I'm unsure of whether there will be actually a bigger budget due to the Disney deal and other things that RTD seems to have wrangled, but I'm happy that Doctor Who is going to increase in quality and the amount of attention it receives. I suppose I'm only really talking to Matt here, as it'd be great to get some more Doctor Who chat on the pod since I started listening when I was about 13. I'm turning 25 tomorrow as I write. Happy 25th.
I love that.
Unfortunately, I do seem to have just droned on like a massive Doctor Who obsessive here, so feel free to edit this down if you read it out. Well, we didn't. Respect to C from Adam.
Are you excited for new Doctor Who, Matt?
I am. I'm fucking super excited for it. So I am currently watching the final Jodie Whittaker series. So after that, I've only got three specials until I've done the entire run from 2005 onwards. As Adam points out there, I'm not a fan of the Jodie Whittaker stuff at all. I actually think it's worse this time now I'm watching it through. And that's not entirely on Jodie Whittaker. I don't think she's the weakest out of all of the Doctors, unfortunately, but it's mostly a Chibnall problem. Like, him as head writer on that, like, three seasons, it turned it into such a boring downbeat show with none of the charm, none of the kind of adventure of the kind of like the RTD or the Moffat era. But if you just wanted some very basic thoughts from me after rewatching it all, Matt Smith, still my favourite, but Peter Capaldi massively went up in my estimations here. I did really like him in the first time I watched it, but having rewatched it now, you can really tell that when you get to the Peter Capaldi era, there's like this much more interesting kind of making real distinct storylines that run through for each of the characters. And Capaldi's like evolution as that character, because when he starts, he's incredibly grumpy, sort of almost playing on the, okay, everybody knows him as Tucker, right? So we kind of want to use a little bit of that. And it creates for a really, really dark first season with him, which I enjoy where it goes with that. It's still very adventurous, but it's got that element of darkness to it. But his second series is a lot to do with him and his companion, Clara, kind of almost playing each other at their own game and pushing it to the risk so far that you end up with this real sort of interesting criminal pairing where it's like, who is going to be the one to sort of say, no, we're all going a bit too far here. I think all of that was done really, really well. And then unfortunately you get to the Jodie Whittaker stuff where there's essentially not a lot of personal development going on with any character in that show. It's very, very kind of bland and downbeat. I think it really suffers. So having Russell T Davies back, who obviously is the person that did the David Tennant and the Christopher Eccleston stuff, yeah, I'm excited. They did the 60th anniversary orchestral stuff the other week, and all the new music is really upbeat and adventurous, so I'm expecting some good stuff.
Am I right in thinking before the next Doctor comes to, is David Tennant coming back for one or two? Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah. So the surprise was that when Jodie Whittaker died and sort of regenerated into next Doctor Who, it wasn't Shuti Gatwa, it was David Tennant. So there's another three episodes where, which is, you know, unheard of really in Doctor Who, them like regenerating back into previous forms.
I doubt I'm going to jump back in. But like I did watch the new ones up until like when David Tennant left. That's when I fell off. I didn't. I think I maybe watched a few Matt Smith ones. But
I
like
Matt Smith.
I don't know.
He was a great doctor.
I love Matt Smith. Yeah,
I do like. For some reason, I think the show was just not interesting me anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, I used to watch like the old ones all the time, and the films, like the old Dalek films. Yeah. And stuff. I used to love Doctor Who, and then I did enjoy. Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant quite a lot, and then I just fell off. I don't know if I grew out of it or what happened, but I doubt I'm going to jump back in, but I'm intrigued to see David Tennant come back. Maybe I'll check out. Like, will That's the thing, like, DOT2 never really was serialized back in the old days, right?
I mean, they were
nowhere
done
near as much.
Yeah, they were done in, like, blocks of four, right? You'd watch four episodes and together they'd like, make an episode.
The way people talk about DOT2 now, I feel like if I jumped in and watched now, I'd be lost. Well, by quite
so
a bit of it.
I massively think that RTD is going to use this as essentially as a soft reboot. So okay. I think these three episodes with David Tennant will be nostalgia bait. It'll all be people that watched it kind of like 15 years ago. Here's just three episodes though, because it's David Tennant, it's Donna, it's Catherine Tate. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like it's just nostalgia bait, but it makes sense for the 60th anniversary. You want something that celebrates what was good about Doctor Who, and season four, which was Catherine Tate and David Tennant, is one of the strongest seasons. So I think that will just be a, like, if you haven't watched it since David Tennant, I think it's, you know, you'll get some joy out of that. I think anything that comes after is going to be basically a soft reboot. So I think you can just jump in from there.
Well, there we go. Doctor Who coming back.
Do you know what's...
I doubt I'll jump back in, but maybe I'll look.
Weird is during my long and esteemed career, I have worked with two people who have gone on to work on Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
One as a writer and then one, I don't know, is it like the production place is in Cardiff or he used to be... Mm-hmm. Yeah, he moved to Cardiff to go and do something on it as well. So one used to write the novels and then worked on it. So
there we go. There we go. Bit of Doctor Who chat on the podcast for everyone who loves Doctor Who. Good stuff. What are we going to be talking about next week? I don't know. Alan Wake 2's out next Friday. Probably talk about that a bit.
If we get it. Yeah.
Lovely. Good stuff. I enjoyed that. What music do we want? I suppose it's got to be a bit of Insomniac Spider-Man music. Oh, I never mentioned the... maybe we'll play the Craven music. I think the Craven music's the best piece of music in the new one. As I mentioned in my review, just sounds like the Uruk-hai music from Lord of the Rings. So I'm loving that. We'll have a bit of that. And if you enjoy Spider-Man, let us know. IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. For now, here's some Craven music. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.